Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the next of our draft countdown shows. Today, we're looking at the offensive tackle position, one the Ravens maybe don't have a tremendous need at, but I'm joined by Kevin Ostreicher, and we're going to count those guys down 10 to 1. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. I'm excited for this. The draft really snuck up on me here where, you know, feels like just yesterday it was about a month and a half away. Now we're almost a week away and a lot of needs for the Ravens to fill on both sides of the ball in a new era of Ravens football. So it's fun and exciting.
You know what? No matter what, the draft always presses me at the end. It's like too much. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I look at all the national guys, people producing draft guides and whatnot. They're all come out about the 10th of April. I mean, they're not out way in advance. So, you know, I try and start the effort, you know, you start the effort with the combine, but do my work that I can in March and into early April. And I'm still struggling like hell to get it done at the end when we're about to do these shows. But what is your experience similar in that respect?
Yeah, it's funny because where I kind of look is towards like, I do a bunch of mock draft simulators and just kind of figure out where they're going to pick. And for me, the thing that kind of gets me is when they have 11 picks like they do this year and you kind of get down to like the seventh round and you're just like, man, I've already taken all these positions. What do I need to double down on? And then especially when you get to like this area, and again, they're like the late breaking story with Reuben Bain and that, you know, tragic situation, like stuff pops up sometimes like that. But generally, I mean, we know stuff that's going to in the range where these guys are going to go. Yeah, probably like beginning of April. Like it's kind of the timeline for me.
All right, let's look at the Ravens situation at offensive tackle, because one of the great benefits they have this year is not going into this draft absolutely needing a tackle. And that can loom over your draft like a black cloud, because it takes a lot of draft capital when you need that position. They had to go through that, of course, in the year they drafted Rosengarten, and they had to consider it last year, and it took a developmental offensive tackle, which was, I think, a good move. And Ronnie Stanley, you know, bounced back with a decent year in 24 in particular that made the 25 through 27 contract possible. By the way, I see that Ronnie Stanley's contract has already been adjusted to make it effectively a three-year deal, whereas I thought it was a two-year $44 million deal. And now they pushed money on it to void years and basically reduced the 2026 cap hit such that he's going to be around in 27.
Yeah, usually, you know, we're talking about, you know, who could come in and potentially fill a void, whether it be a starting spot or even a backup spot. But yeah, I mean, Baltimore, they don't necessarily need that this draft. Now, of course, I think it's still good to invest in the position. And of course, with certain guys who played offensive tackle in college, maybe they can kick inside to guard or even center, as I'm sure we're going to talk about in a little bit here. But I think that, you know, they're in a really interesting spot right now with that, because long-term Stanley's not an option for you. You know, I don't expect him to be in Baltimore for the next 10 years, obviously. So, you know, kind of got to start thinking about it a little bit, but obviously with Baltimore's position, you know, you're not going to take a guy that is going to exclusively play tackle at 14 and then have him sit on the bench for a year. Like you need production from that 14th pick.
Well, that's certainly true. And also they have a guy who had a great developmental year. I want to get to in a second. Roger Rosengarten, though, firmly entrenched at right tackle, entering year three. No question about his position, so we don't need to really hit on him. Carson Vinson, though, had about as good a developmental year as one could hope for. He played extensively in the preseason. He was very close to the league leadership in snaps across the entire NFL. And he had a backup role to Joe Noteboom and eventually ate his lunch before the season was over and was activated for several games, played only a handful of snaps, but really, I think in a lot of ways justified the developmental pick, or at least the tracking of that developmental pick in that first year.
Yeah. That to me also is another reason why, when you look at this particular tackle class and the Ravens situation, you know, you can invest there a little bit. Again, like Joe Noteboom's not going to be on your roster this year, at least I really hope not. So hopefully that's another spot you can maybe add either a vet, or you can look in the draft to a mid to late round guy to just have on your roster. But you don't need to like swing multiple times at this position. realistically, I guess technically you don't even have to swing once if you don't want to, because I think that you can just sign another tackle. But at the same time, I think it's still important.
Well, they don't have room for a fourth pure tackle on the roster. Yes. It's an important consideration because your roster can really only support three guys who play exclusively tackle. And then you're going to swing guys after that. And your game day roster absolutely cannot have four pure tackles on it, because that would only be four IOL you'd be left with, and that's not enough to cover your position. So you have to have swing guys involved in that if you're going to do it. And there are guys in this draft who could fit a guard tackle role, certainly. And some of them would be tackles moving inside that we'll talk about. But it really makes the assignment for, I think, the 2025 draft a little simpler on the offensive line. The Ravens just need to find quality interior offensive line players. And if they can play tackle, it's a bonus. I'm happy if they, you know, number of big names in round one, or two big ones anyway. One is a pure interior lineman, and the other guy's a guard tackle, and there might be a third who's a guard tackle or center tackle that could be exciting. But to me, find the quality interior offensive lineman. If they can play tackle, it's a bonus. And I'm even a little bit agnostic on round.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I think a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I think some of the big consensus is, all right, you're going to work outside in, like, oh, hey, this tackle, you know, you're going to kick him inside to guard, and that's how it works. But you can work inside out too. Like, again, there's a lot of versatility that can happen here. And I think for the Ravens, they did miss Patrick McCary a good bit last season. And, you know, whether it was the fact that, you know, Harbaugh just didn't want to play Emory Jones at right guard, or, you know, whatever that situation was, regardless, you needed someone on the line in general that, I guess, if it was up to Harbaugh felt comfortable with, and clearly he didn't, or he just wanted to play Falele, but you want as many good options as possible, and how many positions those guys can play. The more you can do, the better you have a chance of sticking around or making an impact somewhere. So the versatility is really important.
All right. I'm sure they'll be looking for some players like that. Let's jump into it. Your number 10 guy we'll start with as the guest. Tell us who that is.
Yeah, mine is Markell Bell out of Miami. To me, I mean, he's a massive human being. He's 6'9", 346 pounds. That's around where he comes in. And the big thing for him that I really like, I mean, the 36-plus-inch arms, obviously arm length is a huge topic of conversation when it comes to this position. Now, again, I'm just doing it based off of rankings and kind of where I am with them in particular at their position. But he was really able to come into his own over the course of his college career, which I really liked from him, where you can even look at some of this where it's, I see on the scouting reports, it's zero sacks on 558 pass blocking snaps. Again, I know you do your own work in terms of that. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on kind of what you saw from him here. But some of the stuff that he brings to the table in terms of like his clubbing ability and his ability to, even when he loses, recover effectively. And that can be really big for a player like Lamar Jackson, where even if you do lose and he's able to wiggle out of that, how can you recover yourself? Are you just out of the play completely, or can you get back in and make an impact even if you don't win the rep initially? Now, obviously for him, it's the pass protection, which is good. The run blocking, not so good. So that's something that he would have to work on. But, you know, on top of the foot speed being limited and some other stuff, I think that if the run blocking can come along well, he's already so good in pass protection, or at least he has that potential there. I think there is potential for him to be a guy that can be a really quality tackle at the NFL level. Obviously not day one, because he is so one-dimensional right now, but he's someone I'm really intrigued by.
All right. Bell also happens to be my number 10 guy. 2 years of community college at Holmes Community College. It was a JUCO program before he went to Miami. At 6'9", 346, he bears a striking similarity in terms of size to Jonathan Ogden, including 36 and 3/8-inch arms, which are some of the longest in history. There have been guys over 37 inches, but the number of guys who are 36 and up is extraordinarily small. A 5'36", 40, really has very limited movement skills. He also has a very slow 10-yard with that. Has kind of a vertical frame too, which means he's really going to make it a tackle, or I don't think he really has a chance to move inside to guard. Very solid anchor versus the bull rush. If you look at Orlando Brown, a guy who was just massive in that same respect. I don't think he's going to quite have the feet. I know he's not going to quite have the feet of Jonathan Ogden, who went number four overall by comparison. He faces a lot of challenge from pass rushers who get inside. He does have a problem with standing up at times, and the pass rushers who can get inside can bull him and walk him back despite his enormous size. One thing I like to see as a minimum is that guys who are this tall and this big have the good bailout ability to go 12 to 6 with their rusher. Now, normally that is very significantly related. You're effectively converting your advantage in length to get somebody around the pocket, and usually length and size. And that's this case, Markell Bell has both, and he can do it. And we saw him make a lot of 12 to 6 blocks. That's very good, and that often will put quarterbacks in a good spot. Lamar Jackson specifically, I don't love it as much, by the way, because he has a lot of extended pockets. 12 to 6 doesn't offer the same sort of protection that it does for other quarterbacks. But the slow death of Ronnie Stanley kind of things have been better pressures to give up over the past few years are ones where Lamar knows where the pressure is coming from. Stanley is very effective at keeping the hands off the quarterback. And that I thought has been good. Like a lot of big guys, Bell has a tendency to overset, and you're going to hear this fairly regularly because there's a lot of guys in this class who fall in the same category. Edge rushers will try and put them on an island. The guys who – the really good edge rushers like to rush on the rush side where they're opposite a uncovered tackle or a naked tackle, as I sometimes call them. And they like to fan him out into space so that they can put him on an island and make him make the first move and have it be a mistake or have them have a good counter to it. So with these oversets that he has can leave him vulnerable to the inside. And the twitchier the rushers are, and they certainly are at the NFL level, they'll exploit that. In terms of a run blocking, I think the problem I saw was that he got over his feet a lot. He's massive. He leans into it. He doesn't really need to with his kind of weight, you know, and length in particular. He could sit back and do some jabbing, even in you want to push on your opponent, but he doesn't need to get out over his feet the same way he does. Now, I guess the more height you have, the more it can be a problem, but with his length, it should be less of a problem with decent bend. He's going to definitely be a player who has to stay low in order to be impactful as an NFL offensive tackle. I thought he handled seals on the runs to his side with half-level climbs. That's something I really associate with Orlando Brown as being a guy who wasn't somebody who'd go out well and get into space to make blocks, but is a guy who can get a half level up and find work on the scraping linebacker there. But it's going to be a problem for him to get to level two or level three with quicker men. And he's probably going to have to adjust his style a little bit to be a moving traffic cone in level two and three, as opposed to someone who has to lunge into contact. And that's another thing you'll hear for a number of players, because offensive linemen tend to get lungy versus quicker players in level two and level three. And a lot of times they'd be better suited just to kind of reposition themselves to block off the angle from the ball carrier. I don't think he matches with the Ravens' offensive line needs at all. He's left tackle or bust. The Ravens can't add a fourth pure tackle to the roster for game day. There's a limited number of really okay tackles in this draft. He's extremely traitsy. If the Ravens did take a chance on him with a second developmental guy, it would be two things. It would be a vote of no confidence in Carson Vinson in a way, but it would also be a pretty clear indication they would have a 2-year plan for Bell to take over at left tackle, I think. So it's an interesting conundrum, but I don't think Markell Bell is the right guy for the Ravens, even though I've got him number 10.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I was about to mention that I think if they do take a later round developmental guy who is purely a tackle, it will tell us a lot about their thoughts about Carson Vinson. But I think that they like Vinson a lot. So that's why I would be shocked if they made a move like that. Again, I know we're doing the ranking just based off where we feel they are at the position itself, but there's like this very unique pocket where it would make sense for the Ravens to take a tackle. And we've already mentioned it where, you know, versatility, or if a guy just free falls somehow and you're sure. Like, okay, well, you have to just take this guy here. But to me, for the pure guys who could be late round picks, I feel like some of those picks would just be better served maybe being packaged for a higher up pick to take another need or something along those lines. It's not about the player itself. It's just about, you know, where the Ravens are right now. And you don't want to be in the business of, you know, for lack of a better term, wasting a roster spot on a guy that is either not going to play for you early or, you know, maybe isn't going to be ready for a while. And while prospects that are projects are great, you know, you can only have so many, I feel like, on this roster this year.
Okay, to take the other side of that coin for a moment, I'm a extraordinarily heavy-handed proponent of the notion that Ravens need every single draft pick this year. They have the fewest total players on their roster, fewest total players under contract of any team. They have a ton of needs across a number of positions. And the kind of I would say Bell falls into their value range in about round five. So if they could legitimately take a chance on him there, and could they trade the pick away? Sure. But I'd want them to really get something for it if they're doing it, whether it's a couple of lower picks or it's even a pick in next year's draft. If they want to go that route and go for a four, say in next year's draft, somebody likes Markell Bell that much. Sure. I'm okay with that, but the Ravens need their picks. I mean, and they're there's a, the general consensus among Ravens fans who specifically, you know, advocate for things on Twitter are that they basically are happy trading away draft picks because they want to win now draft picks for players. So Crosby is very popular in terms of a trade of, thank goodness they finally did something with these draft picks they're never doing anything with. But also, you know, anytime you trade up for picks, they like it. Anytime you trade back or trade, you know, God forbid you trade for a future draft pick, it's a mistake. And the truth of the matter is the times the Ravens have done those things, they've generally been very effective at it. You know, the trade backs, I hated the fact they passed on Derwin James in 2018, but they did trade back twice and they got a lot of additional draft capital that fueled a lot of that great draft. I just didn't think they made a good first round pick to get Hayden Hurst. So, but in general, I really trust the Ravens with a general, let the board come to them. Player needs to be value at that position. And that often leads to a fair amount of trading back. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I think it just very quickly, generally, because I know this is kind of off topic about what we're having the conversation on is, you know, if you get to, I think when you talk about trading back just from 14 in particular, mm-hmm. people look at that and they say, why would you do that? They already have 11 picks. You don't need that. And I reference, you know, what they did in 2018, even when they traded back in 2008 and then moved back up, like, you know, mm-hmm. you can do things like that and it can either secure you, because I think that, again, if you end anywhere, like I think 10 is like, I'd be cool with 10 picks for them. If you can trade back from 14, because let's say, and we'll get into a couple of other tackle names, obviously, as we get throughout the show, let's say you have a couple of options that are available at 14 to you that you think maybe will fall, but you have five or six guys on your board that, you know, you'd be totally cool with taking a 14. And so you say, all right, we're going to trade back four spots. So there's a guarantee because we're fine with any of these guys, because they all fit a need. They all are a good player for us. We feel like they're good. If there are five or six guys, you trade back four spots, you have a guarantee of one or two of those guys still being on the board. And then you can take that additional draft capital and maybe move up from 45. Maybe you can move up in the third round and you have that additional draft capital. You can still end up with anywhere in that like 9 to 10 to 11 pick range. And then sign vets after the draft, which I do expect the Ravens to do.
Yep.
So there's a lot of possibilities with that. I don't, like, honestly, people are saying, all right, trade up, trade up, trade up. I think the more realistic possibility is they trade back instead of trade up. I do not think they're trading up at all.
Right. And that's where I am, too. I don't think there's any way in hell they trade up in round one. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's the only place it matters, because that's where the value is. If you trade up in round one four spots, you're going to give up your third round pick to do it. And I don't see them making a move like that this year. I'm not saying it can't happen. I just think it's quite unlikely. Let's go to your number nine guy.
Yep. For me, at number nine, I got Drew Shelton out of Penn State, 6'5", 313, someone who really intrigues me because of his fluidity. And, you know, it's funny because you kind of watch these guys and you read the scouting reports and kind of get to know them. You see a lot of like basketball background with some of these guys and they're like, oh, hey, this guy played basketball, or this guy played this sport. And multi-sport athletes, I think, are very important because they do add different tricks to the trade, I guess, to their toolbox here. But to me, he covers ground really well. Like, you can see him get out into space, I think, pretty effectively. Now, there are some concerns, I know, with the size and the strength for him. So I'm curious to see how he would fit within this system. But I think that when you get him into space, he's super effective. And I think when you're looking at the zone scheme stuff, that's where he fits. And to me, he's someone that, again, later round, potentially, if they take him, we'll kind of know a little bit about what their feeling is with Carson Vinson. But he's someone where the movement ability is really good to me. And while the concerns about the other stuff, I think, are very valid, I'd be interested to see if he was a pick for Baltimore, how Dwayne Ledford and the rest of that coaching staff could develop him a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to be, we're going to evoke his name, no doubt, a lot of times in this, because there's a lot of players who need to be developed either with a positional change or just better play at tackle. I have Shelton at number 13, and it is, by the way, a very tight group between about number 8 and number 15 for me. It's an extremely tight group. But Shelton, I have down there, and he's one that I'm fairly certain should not be in my top 10, but that's the way I see it. He's a vertically built guy. He's not the pair of guard. And of course, if he's going to play tackle, that's what you probably want as a vertical built guy with quick feet. He's going to take time in an NFL weight room. That's something that will come up from him for sure. I think he mirrors reasonably well. He does give ground regularly. And he gets beaten on the edge. That leads to losses in speed to power, which are not good. But he's the type of left tackle who has to be more fearful of speed to power moves than even of inside counters, because he's just not a play strength guy at all. That's you brought up that already. He does have some solid short area quickness. He can climb effectively, I think, in the run game. He's certainly a high effort guy getting downfield. He's okay playing in space there. And I thought one other thing was he knows when to let go on the edge on running plays to avoid holding flags. And he had one flag in his final season at Penn State and 7 in 2,455 college snaps. So that's one every 350.7. There's a few players who really stand out. He's one of the better ones, certainly, in terms of avoiding flags. He has some play at left guard, right guard, and right tackle, but the bulk of his snaps did come at left tackle at Penn State. Real developmental prospect. Doesn't have an easy position to me, because I'm not sure he can move inside and be the kind of a guy. He just doesn't have the build to play guard, honestly, really. Could maybe play center, I think the real question is, can he stay at tackle with the kind of build he has and the strength he can aspire to in the future but doesn't currently have. So he'll be 23 in December. He's not a super young prospect either. He's normal age. I wouldn't call him not super young, not super old, but not a guy who I would project extraordinary strength development from, unfortunately. So I had him at number 13.
Yeah, you're right. Where I was kind of trying to make this list, and I was thinking, like, I could put like 3 different guys in this 9 spot, because that's just where these like lower round tackles are. But I get it. I mean, like, the size stuff is real, definitely. I put him there because of the movement ability that he has, and I think there is potential there, especially with the scheme. But, you know, if there's not any weight at, if there's not strength there, if he can't develop that over the course of his first couple of years, I mean, he's going to have a lot of trouble keeping up there.
All right, we'll jump into my number 9 guy, and that's Austin Barber of Florida. Another guy, really big, 6'7", 318, a little bit shorter arms at 33 and an eighth. He'll be 23 in May. Good athletic profile for another former basketball player, below average arm length, but solid movement skills. I thought he had really solid get off, understands his assignments well. So those are the positives. I have to get into some of the negatives here. His feet and mirror are good. His length is probably insufficient for left tackle. Now, that doesn't mean he couldn't play right tackle, where you can get away with being a little shorter if you're a big, powerful guy who can move people in the run game. He has lots of slow death pressures that actually would work pretty well with Lamar Jackson. So we're talking about a guy who really, in a lot of ways, is similar to Ronnie Stanley in terms of how he loses or how he manages a player who can bull him but can't necessarily beat his mirror. So he trades space to maintain his mirror, is the way I often call it with Ronnie. He did not play well versus some of the toughest opponents. He got taken to the woodshed by Texas A&M and Miami, who have a high concentration of the great pass rushers in this draft, of course. They have NFL caliber guys on both sides. I think from the run blocking perspective, He's a guy who there are not very many tackles who impact the backside of run plays with a combination of a little bit of quickness and understanding of assignment. But he's that guy. And we've lived with that for years now. Ronnie Stanley is that guy. And they've had lots of other players, Bryant McKinney maybe being the optimal example of it, or the prototypical example of a guy who has no impact on the backside of a run play at all. So you could certainly see either side. Climbs well off combinations. He can get a little lungy in level two. That's a lot of linemen, so I'm not too concerned about it. Had 29 flags in 2,728 college snaps. That's one every 94.1. It's one of the highest rates in this class. It will certainly factor into a lot of evaluations over him. He's a right tackle originally. He moved to left tackle in late 22 and never went back. The good run blocking results probably make him somebody for the Ravens that they could consider, but he's a difficult projection at guard with his build. He's got all, you know, at 6'7", 312, 318. He's got a tall, lean build, and that wouldn't be ideal for moving inside. So I think he probably stays a tackle, and some team will appreciate a player like Barber, who is a second year starter they would hope for in the future.
Yeah, Barber was my number 11. So again, you just kind of get into that range, and there are a lot of guys you can put in a lot of different places. But I do really like him because of obviously the stuff that you talked about. And especially when he's able with the quick get off at the line and able to beat defenders and a bunch of other stuff that I think can fit the NFL game very well. Now, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, with those penalties, you're going to have to clean that up. And we've seen how penalties can impact a season for the Ravens. And in terms of, you know, him generating push, I think would be a big step for him to kind of get there as a run blocker, where he's already like, again, he's good as a run blocker, but I think to me that is the one area where I've seen some people say that he could be a guard. I'm like you. I think it's possible, but I don't necessarily see it. I project he stays at tackle as well. So I don't know where his range is. You know, I don't know if it's like an early day three, mid day three. Does he sneak in a late day two? I'm not sure. But he's one of those, again, one of the developmental guys, not going to start for you right away. That maybe if the Ravens do take him, again, the phrase of the show here is that you learn about Carson Vinson and how they feel. But he's someone that is intriguing to me still. A lot of these guys are.
All right. Let's bump it up to number – you're number eight guy, right?
Yep. My number eight guy. My number eight guy is Blake Miller out of Clemson. Now, for Blake Miller, I think it's really interesting for him in particular because – he got better, I feel like, and that's obviously something where growth is really important. But I think for me, pass protection was really big for him. His athletic profile, I think, is really cool as well. Now he stands at 6'7", 317. So again, just a massive human being. But I think that he's a super smart football player. You can tell that he knows where to go, what to do, and understands the game and where he needs to be. He also had, I know a lot of people talk about this, the 54 consecutive starts. So obviously one of the best traits he can have is availability. And that is something where not only the availability comes into factor, but his experience playing high-level football and starting playing high-level football. And it's...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I see a lot of people talk about this as well, where, you know, he moved to left tackle at Pittsburgh in an emergency situation in, I think it was 2024, where there wasn't really any drop off for him. So the ability to adjust on the fly is really good there. Now, the thing with him is the run blocking, right? That's been a theme early on here for some of these guys, where you can kind of tell where, like, he'll look really solid and sound in pass protection, but then there'll be other stuff that comes up in the film, whether it's pad level, or, you know, maybe the hand placement isn't fully there, footwork a little bit as well. So again, I still think a developmental guy in an ideal situation, but someone who, again, I think there's already a lot there with him where he can maybe be fast-tracked a little bit if everything comes together.
Okay, so I have Miller at number five. I really like him. So what is there to start with? He's got real strength, grown man strength with 32 bench reps. You mentioned the durability. I mean, he's got legendary durability. His 54 consecutive starts were the most ever by a Clemson non-specialist. So I can basically, they had some kicker or punter who played more consecutive games. But he also had the most career snaps in the Clemson program's history. Which is, that's a real astounding thing. Improved each year. That is, it's a little bit of a fear for a guy like Miller. And I don't really consider this the same sort of fear for him, that he is extremely polished. And even though he's not old, he's 22, turned 22 in February. So he's a young guy, but he has had 3,700 college snaps to hone his craft against, you know, legitimate men who are facing him in anger, as opposed to practice and try to improve that way. I as a pass blocker, he has a big kick slide off the snap that helps him defeat speed. As always, that entails overset risk. I will say his active feet aid with mirroring after the initial slide. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's be careful to explain. So I like to see tackles who work with short, choppy steps to move left or right to continue to mirror their opponent. The guys who get themselves in a ton of trouble, they get their legs close together where pass rushers, basically their eyes light up and they know exactly how to get that player off balance quickly. The really extreme ones, and Orlando Brown's name comes up again as one of these guys, will cross their feet. And then you it's just, Any NFL edge rusher worth his salt is going to really take advantage of that and get the guy off his pins. But good active feet from him is one of the things. He does stand up some, and, you know, at 6'7", that's a problem because he makes himself susceptible to the bull rush. He has some vulnerability to outside moves, and he can be a little bit slow and reactive in terms of his ability to go to the 12-6 block as a bailout. So that was something I didn't like as much. And despite all the weaknesses I'm pointing out here, some of the weaknesses, which is not all weaknesses, his college career was generally one of ascending pass blocking results. If you look at PFF scores or you look at this tape, just year to year, you'll see a guy who's clearly getting better and is getting more and more polish year after year. In terms of the run blocking, he climbs effectively. He's a balanced disruptor at the line of scrimmage. Really, really like that. So if he's on a double team with a three tech on his side, or even just a down block on a two or two eye guy, he's going to be trying to get that guy off his pins. But it really more likely would not be a two or two eye guy. Be a three or maybe even a five who's trying to cross his face. He's tries to get that guy off his pins. In a way that is positive before he climbs. He has the speed and the footwork to pull on the backside of a counter place. That's something the Ravens ask a lot of their guys. I think his hand usage is something that's been broadly criticized. And there are certain reps where he lets his hands stray outside of, and others where he doesn't do enough to initiate first contact. He did have 22 flags, including five in his final season. That's one every 170.5. Not an extraordinarily high or low total. That's right about probably the midpoint of the draftable group. You mentioned the 101 snaps he played at left tackle in 24. Otherwise, he was a right tackle his entire career. And he'll go in round one in an ideal world. I think, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing here. he will not go in round one, yeah. No matter what his parents would like to think. but I think he's a possibility that the Ravens could draft, and probably a guy. I have him as number five. I think I have him as basically a third round guy. No, really, I think he's probably a second round guy if the Ravens want him. So probably not a positional switch guy. Maybe Ledford sees something and says, no, you know what? This is the guy I could move to guard.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting too, because again, we talk about Vincent and all these guys, and I know I keep bringing them up, but you know that was under John Harbaugh, right? There are going to be guys that this new coaching staff likes and doesn't like. It's not anything that Vincent did or didn't do last season. You know, sometimes it just comes down to, well, we want to take this guy because we think that we can develop this guy and he fits more of the system. It's not anything that you did. It's essentially, it's not you, it's me when it comes to those type of situations. And that's just the reality of it. It's with the Ravens free agents. It's with some of the guys on the roster. And so I think you make a great point where if Dwayne Ledford sees a Blake Miller or one of these more developmental guys that maybe has, like, to me, I think with Blake Miller, his floor is already like there, you know, there's something there, but with that essentially floor, you know that if the rest catches up and you have a guy like Ledford Cushion, you have a guy that's an impact player for you for a long time. So if Ledford sees that and says, I really want this guy, and the Ravens say, well, we already have all these tackles, Dwayne Ledford might say, well, you got to figure it out because I want him on the roster, and then he'll pound the table and that'll happen. So I can see a situation like that happening where it's not about Vincent himself. It's about the Ravens and this new group really liking a specific guy, seeing the potential and understanding, hey, maybe you got to make a tough decision based off that.
Okay. So while I agree with that in general, that the new guys should have a contribution that they make to the draft things, the roster is ultimately DaCosta's selections to make.
Sure.
And the players have to be, you know, developed by the and their silos are separate for exactly that reason. So yep. DaCosta's judgment is ultimately paramount in determining whether or not they need to continue attempting to develop Carson Vincent in a way. You know, it's not the coach's job to say this guy's not going to be on the roster this next year because we didn't draft him, kind of thing. So anyway, I'll move on.
I was going to say it's a good point. I think it's interesting to see what the dynamic will be with this new group, because I know obviously like Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh had their dynamic. And so now it's entering a new dynamic where that's going to have to be built and developed up. So for DaCosta, who obviously has been in the building for a while, you know, like obviously there's respect there. I'm not saying there's not, but Eric DaCosta saying, hey, I've built this roster. I know these guys, like I've been in the building with these guys. I think that's going to be something where the coaches are going to say, hey, we really like this guy, but you're right. I mean, they're not the GM, Eric DaCosta is.
They had a special relationship. Obviously, you have your work relationship, and they basically were sharing a croquet set with their backyards together like that. So they did have a relationship I wouldn't expect to be matched. But I do think there's respect there. But right now, Harbaugh and DaCosta were in many ways peers. In some ways, DaCosta was the junior guy because Harbaugh had been a peer of Ozzie for 10 years before DaCosta came along, but DaCosta had been with the organization even longer than Harbaugh had. So they were very much, you know, came up through the organization from 2008 to 26 as peers. And I wouldn't have seen a dominant relationship. In the new relationship, there's no doubt about it in my mind that DaCosta, while a consensus builder and while that's his natural bent, has to really take a firm hand in terms of being the number one guy on personnel decisions here and not let himself be swayed too much. I really don't want to hear from DaCosta 2 years from now, even in looking back at this draft and saying, you know what, that Devon Drew, he was Ozzie's guy, or that would be somebody else he'd be saying, and he was the guy that Minter was pounding the table for. I want some consensus building out of that. I definitely want DaCosta to be the guy.
Yep, 100%.
All right, I'll move on. Number eight guy, Isaiah World of Oregon. Now, he's got a lot of things to worry about. Most of the front and center is a medical. He tore his ACL in the national championship game. That will impact his rookie season. I don't think the Ravens really want to go there with him, but I do think he's a solid developmental prospect. Now, 23 in September, so he's going to be 24 effectively when he plays football again, I think, or when he plays a reasonable amount of football, because I think he'll lose a lot of this year to that injury. And he ran, they have some measurement for him, but he hasn't done any combine testing. He didn't go to the combine. He didn't do any pro day testing because of the injury, but they have a 4:40 40 on him that they've timed somewhere else. 34 and a half inch arms. He's very raw, long limb tackle, very limited movement skills. Outstanding pure pass blocker, though, and is somebody who was good in out of TPS. Is effective and purposeful hand usage. He's not simply hitting. You know, I always make the pinball analogy that, you know, you don't want to see guys who have to strike with both hands at the same time. You want to strike with independent hand usage. And, you know, I think of Ali and combinations of punches and how effective they could be, and not just, you know, punching out with both hands. And a lot of tackles still try and do that with lock-on reps, where they try and go to the armpits on both sides and really lock in. And he's not that guy. He goes 12-6 when he's beaten to the edge. I think that's good. He's not a mirror guy, and that is kind of a kiss of death. Which means he's a little bit vulnerable to either oversetting and being beaten inside or any really pass rusher who has a plan. It may be an inside-out move that he gets shown, but half-man moves are going to give him a lot of trouble. He's big enough to handle the bull rush against most players. He gets over his feet too often for a man with his length. That's something I think can be coached and corrected. But he's too far. Too often he puts himself at risk of being on the ground by being out over his feet. His arms do sometimes stray to the outside, particularly when run blocking. That's led to a lot of penalties. Another area I think probably can be corrected is getting people to give up on a run play on the edge is something I think that good coaching can fix. He does not have a good sense of knowing when to give up on that edge block as of now, though. He can provide value to clear out a double-teamed player. So a lot of times you have seal guys on the edge on a down block. They turn and they obstruct the players from getting to the outside, and they can oftentimes move up and catch a scraping player. Those are all good things. He has the size and the power to drive block and move players, cave in that side of the offensive line. You want to see, by the way, the greatest ever cave-in game for the left side of the Ravens offensive line? Look at the 2027-0 win over the Cowboys and watch Jonathan Ogden and Edwin Mulitalo absolutely rip apart the offensive left side of the or the right side, we'll say, of the Dallas defensive line. We're not able to handle it all. It's beautiful because that game was the first national game I believe ever done in Baltimore, like a 425 game that was done. And they had John Madden was doing the game, and Mulitalo and he went to the same high school, and he did all this telestration on the left side. It's probably available out there somewhere on YouTube if you can't get it. It will be at some point, but definitely a copy of it that's out there being traded around by people. What else to say about this? 8 flags in his final season in Oregon. That was a problem in his career. At 40 and 3,241 college snaps. That's 1 every 81.0 snaps. Project tackle. You have to deal with a year of loss when I don't. You know, I think he needed to make a lot of progress in coaching. Maybe he can do some of that. Maybe he can't. The Ravens haven't had a good record of that recently. I think he's a day three risk. The Ravens are not an obvious landing spot for it, but I do see enough there to like in Isaiah World to put him up at number 8.
Yeah, I had him at 12. You know, the injury was a big thing and the penalties were another. I mean, look, I think he's very talented. And, you know, you can look at the frame and all that he brings to the table there, you know, the hand stuff and, you know, all the stuff that you mentioned with him. I just wonder if that's a direction the Ravens would go with some of the inconsistencies. And like you said, with having to have him rehab year one, it'd be tough. I mean, I think the guy a lot of people look to with that is David Ajabo.
Yep.
Where just, you know,
snake bit.
Yeah. Has had a year where he needed to come back, and we knew that he had all the potential in the world, but, you know, needed time to reach it. And then obviously the injury, not just obviously coming out of, you know, the pro day, but all the other stuff he suffered it just ruined his development. So for Baltimore, again, it's a new coaching staff in the building, all that stuff. Maybe Dwayne Ledford can work his magic. I have a lot of trust in Ledford and what he can do. But I had him down at 12 mainly because of the injury concern, where I think he can come back and be a really good player, a guy you can develop, but you're essentially starting that clock a year later and adding on to your 2027 pool, if that makes sense.
I am entirely with you. The Ravens obviously have been snake bit, not just with Ajabo, but you know, they tried the NFI route with Voorhees, and that obviously the lack of development hurt. And of course they just went through it with Emory Jones. So I honestly think it's very unlikely that they take a player like World. I just do see talent there. So let's move on. Your number seven guy.
Yeah. My number seven guy, Caleb Tiernan out of Northwestern. And you can believe it, he was a varsity basketball letterman. He played basketball. There it is. It's the basketball background. So, but he's someone where, again, it's pass protection for him. Again, that's a theme here early. But to me, I think what really intrigues me about him, the footwork is really good from him. You can tell the scouting reports has it, the tape has it. Also, I think the angles he takes are really effective, and I think he knows where to go. And a lot of that, he moves really well for his size as well. I mean, he's 6'8", 323, again, just another massive human being. So I think the potential is there. And also, I know a lot of people talk about some of the combine results where I've seen it on multiple scouting reports where, you know, the explosiveness for him, 99th percentile vertical jump. So he has that in him as well. And he has 5 years of the starting experience, which is really big in my opinion, and has it at both tackle spots too. So you do have some versatility there in terms of whether he could play on the left or right side. He was a team captain, and I think that he fits that role very well, where just, again, was a leader and can come in and just, you know what to do and where to go and all that. Now, again, the run blocking is the area that he needs to improve upon. Sometimes it's in pad level, sometimes it's in the hips and the agility. But again, I think that the flight, like we talked about with Blake Miller, the floor is already there for him. And if the ceiling catches up, I think you get a really good player.
Okay, I'm lower on Tiernan, and I have him at number 14. Lot of reasons here. He's 23 in January, so he's played 5 years. To me, that's a negative because developmentally, he's got less upside in terms of additional years to grow. And he's, I would say, he's certainly more polished as a player, even though he's not perfect there. Very limited movement skills, a 5.30 and the 40, which is not the ultimate measurement for alignment, of course, but he also has an 808 three cone, which is that's up there in historically bad range. I think again, Orlando Brown's name comes up again because he was very extreme in terms of his combine testing. He was up there in the 8+ range. But you know, he's an honorable mention All Big Ten in 24, a second team All Big Ten in 2025. Does have very short arms at 32.25 inches, so that is an extremely limiting factor for him in particular, in addition to the developmental concerns. He probably is not long enough to play tackle, and he almost certainly has the wrong frame to move in and play guard at 6'8", 323. So you may have a guy who his frame is built to play tackle, and if his arms were 2 inches longer, even an inch and a half longer, you'd make do. But he's just got too much risk of people getting in and under his pads. Does have a pretty good bull rush anchor and reverse C recovery, but he does get out over his feet when he strikes. And I think NFL defensive tackles in particular are going to take advantage of that if he's on the – I'm already projecting him into guard doing that, obviously. And we'll put him on the ground regularly. Edges, maybe not so much because they don't really use strength in the same way to rip people down. That's really more of a defensive tackle thing. Does have some hand violence like that. Lack of athleticism in the run game is a problem. His get off is good enough to contribute on the backside of run plays. That's something. He doesn't have a particularly high college flag rate. It's one every 227.7. I just don't see him as a good fit at all for the Ravens. And I suspect he's going to have problems finding a permanent position. If they're talking a day three flyer, I've got no problem. You know, he's a lineman who's had some success, some awards, and maybe they can turn him into something that he isn't right now. But I'm less excited about Caleb Tiernan. And that said, you know, hey, he's still my 14th overall offensive tackle, and I've got a fifth round grade on him, which is not terrible. And he does kind of fit in the middle of a large group. if I knew more about where Isaiah World was in terms of injury, like I knew he wasn't going to play in 2025, I could easily see having not those two switch spots, but I could easily see World dropping below Tiernan and Tiernan being 13th on my list, I'd say.
Yeah, anywhere from seven to like it's a wide range of guys. So like I totally get it. And I think that with him, I think you have a good enough floor to where he's definitely worth a flyer for a team. And I think that, again, the stuff that he needs to catch up on and get better at, and sometimes just things you can't teach. You know, sometimes you have the frame you have, or you know, you do this and you do that. But I think that if it does catch up, he can be a good player. But again, that's just kind of what the draft is, right? It's if, and you just want to give yourself the best chance. And if there are a lot of these negative intangibles for certain guys, and maybe it's not like, you know, bullet point lists, but if you say, man, that's a really big one and I'm not sure about that, then you kind of have to weigh that against other guys. So I think it's intriguing because you do have a lot of those guys that can maybe go in day two, day three, and, you know, still make impacts, but clearly not ready to play year one.
All right, now he was your number seven guy, right?
Yep, seven.
Okay, so we're jumping to my number seven guy. Before we get into that, and obvious for obvious reasons, I took out four guys from the offensive tackle group and moved them inside for the offensive line show, for the IOL show, I should say. And that's Spencer Fano of Utah, Jennings Dunker of Iowa, Cage Casey of Boise State, and Brian Parker of Duke. Now, my next guy is a guy I should have moved inside, but I didn't. But I looked at the position. He actually would be about the same place at either offensive tackle or guard for me. And that's Trey Zune of Texas A&M. 6'6", 312, 32.5-inch arms. He's probably headed inside for that reason. He's an older player, 24 in October. Has outstanding across-the-board athletic testing. A 5.0 40, a 170 10-yard, top-shelf jumps, 33 bench reps. All the testing other than that bench, by the way, was from his pro day. But the length really forces a move inside. He's an athletic tackle, obviously, who is length challenged, but improved consistently over a five-year career at Texas A&M. The reason I mention that is that when somebody improves consistently, I do kind of expect improvement year over year. But I concern myself when the last year at age 23 is the best year by a good margin. That's a problem. So I probably like Zune a little bit less than other people do who like love the athleticism or really value RAS extremely highly. I think the age really plays against Zune to a certain degree. As a pass blocker, his mirror is good. He maintains it with short steps. That's exactly what I want to see in a tackle. It's probably the first thing I want to see in a draftable tackle, literally, is that his mirror is good. And he maintains it with either a wide base or short steps or however you want to term it, has the skills, has the feet to stay in front of his opponent. When he is beaten to the edge, he's vulnerable to speed to power because of his build and length. And he has difficulty using length to make a 12 to 6 block. So that's another reason why he really needs to move inside. I think he will. His anchor has a better chance to be, I think, sufficient at guard, but he's still got a lean build that may be an issue, and his feet will be marginalized on the inside. So his ability to use his feet it's not exactly a phone booth, but in the more limited spaces that are inside is going to be less. As a run blocker, he won't have any issue with the foot speed for pulling, whether it's from center or from guard. Good, nice high effort getting downfield. I like. I expect him to be technically sound on double teams that we didn't necessarily see when he was a tackle, and probably have line leadership and room leadership that is pretty clear by both effort and line calls. So I would expect him to take over in that way from Linderbaum if the Ravens got him. Longer defensive tackles who bull then shed, in particular two-gap guys. You can be a shed then chase player. Those are usually penetrators, some people call them, or you can be a bull then shed guy, which means you're really trying to walk that opposing player back. It's those two gap players that'll give him more trouble inside and be able to probably throw him around a little more than we would like. Had one flag in his final season at Texas A&M, 10 and 3,286 college snaps. So one every 328.6 is very good. He played 126 snaps at center as a senior. Essentially, all his previous play was at left tackle. I know there's a lot of people who love this guy, and I like him. I just don't love him the way a lot of other people do. He's receiving lots of attention for his athleticism. I think he'll find a spot in the NFL, whether that's at center or guard. I think it'll be a matter of work ethic, probably gets him there, and versatility both. I'm less sure that he's going to be a truly impactful player. And I have him at number seven, and that is, I think that's exactly the same spot I would have had him in, on at guard. And I've got at tackle, I've got a fourth or fifth round grade on him. I could see him as high as the fourth round, but I'd be happier with the value in the fifth.
Yeah, I did not have him on my list just because I have been very much, he's an interior guy. The only guy out of those people that you listed that I kept on this list is Spencer Fano, because I think it's an intriguing conversation in terms of like what they could do at 14. But I mean, look, I think as a potential interior option, he is really intriguing. And one of the guys, because again, with a lot of these picks that we're talking about for tackle, it's like, well, he's good and he has these traits, but do the Ravens really need another tackle on their roster right now? No, if he can't do other things. But with the interior spots, like, I'm expecting at least two guys there. So I think that he's one of those players you can get good value on, especially because of the experience. It's a lot of the stuff that you already mentioned. I just think some of it is some of the inconsistencies in terms of balance and timing and that stuff, which I think can be pretty easily coached up. So I think he'd be a nice piece for Dwayne Ledford to work with. And with the added versatility, you know, you can always move a guy back out if you really want. Now, I wouldn't do that here, but like he can do it. Like, you know, he has that ability in him. But if you can get a guy, maybe he can be, it's crazy, maybe he can be your McCary. I don't know. You can
on an emergency basis. Yeah, I'd be fine. He'd get you through a game, certainly, maybe get you through 2 weeks, but I wouldn't want him out there for a long period of time.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Outstanding stuff. I appreciate you coming on, Kevin. And we're going to talk about the rest, the 6-1 picks in part 2 of the show. But tell us where they can find your work online.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me over at Locked On Ravens. We're a 5-day-a-week plus more daily Ravens podcast. So we do twice per day, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern time. And, you know, we do a lot of different coverage. And of course, this time is always really exciting because of the draft. We have coverage year round, talking everything and every headline around the Ravens. So you can find that on YouTube in video form if you prefer to watch, or in audio form wherever you get your podcast. You can also find me on social media at ChaosRecord34, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, the whole nine yards. So we're all Ravens all the time for me.
All right, very good. One of the few people who puts out as many episodes as we do here. So definitely a daily show. Other folks out there, we're looking for you to join us for draft night. And I'm looking for people who want to be panelists for 1 to 2 hours on day 3 in particular, but any day. You tell me when you'd like to be on, but also just to join us for what is an absolutely lot of fun for the 3 days of the draft. We're on for every single hour from the Ravens, from the first pick of the draft to the Ravens' last pick. And we have an interactive method of doing that. We hope you'll join us for that. At least give it a try and enjoy it with us, because we really take a lot of information from the stream audience as well as the panelists to kind of highlight some things on the spreadsheet and what we're hoping to see with the next pick. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you as always, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.